Today's episode of Locked On Yankees is brought to you by RockAuto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need.
You are Locked On Yankees, your daily New York Yankees podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome.
You're listening to the Locked On Yankees podcast, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm your host, Stacey Gotsoulias. You can find us on Twitter at Locked On Yankees, all one word. You can find me on Twitter at StaceGots. Please feel free to tweet questions or comments to either account. If you're a new listener, hello and welcome. If you're a returning listener, welcome back. I hope you all enjoy today's episode. It is part two of my conversation with author Jerry Beach, who wrote the Subway Series, Baseball's Big Apple Battles, and the Yankees-Mets 2000 World Series Classic. We discussed that last night of the series, October 26th, 2000. We discussed our different experiences at the time, Jerry as a writer, me as a fan. We discuss the state of broadcasting now. We discuss the current World Series and more. But first, you can get Locked On Yankees and all other Locked On podcasts straight to your phone in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Yankees. The conversation picks up right after the last out of Game 5 of the 2000 World Series. What was funny was my friend was working for the Yankees at the time, and he said to me and my girlfriends, if the Yankees win tonight, this is where they're going. I'm going to be there. So if you want to come down into the city, hang out. And we're like, yeah. So Soho hits his 1,000 bouncer. Middle. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to be partying with the Yankees tonight. Then Piazza hits that ball, and I'm thinking, oh, fuck. Nope.
Yeah. No, I'm not. Wait, yes, I am.
Yeah. And yeah. I miss my youth. I was only 26, and, you know, we left our houses at, 12:30 at night, drove down to Midtown to go to 151, because that's where Jeter liked to go.
Okay.
And when we get there, there's a line outside the club, and we're about to get on the line. And the bouncer goes, no, ladies, come on in. We're like, okay. And it wasn't like we were dressed. You know, I was very prudish back then, wearing like a button-up shirt and pants. I looked fine, but it wasn't like I was dressed to hook up with people. You know what I mean? They let us into the bar. Our friend is sitting there. We're hanging out with him. 10 minutes later, and it was like a movie, okay? Mm-hmm. Derek Jeter walks into the place. Everyone parts like the Red Sea. He walks in between all of us. And it was really like a movie scene. It felt like the music stopped.
Yeah.
The cool guy walked into the
slow motion
with his entourage in slow motion, walking between the crowd. And then everything started up again once he went up where he needed to go.
Yeah.
And the thing about it was, my friends and I were just so happy to be in the same room as a bunch of World Series champions that we were just dancing and having a good time. And at one point, my friend Melissa looks over and she goes, okay, don't all look at the same time, but Derek Jeter is looking at us. And then, of course, we all turn and look at the same time.
Right.
Because we were the only girls in that club who did not try to talk to him. And he was probably looking at us like, why are you even here?
Right. Don't you know who I am? What time of night is this? Like 2:30, 3 o'clock?
Oh, yeah. We were out. Oh, well, this is the funny part. So we're there all night until closing. So 4 o'clock, 4:30. Dancing, having fun. Glenn Allen Hill bumped into me on the dance floor. He was dancing by himself. He was wearing black dress pants, a royal blue silk short sleeve top, wide open with this thick-ass gold chain, dancing by himself. He bumps into me. Now, I'm not a small girl. I'm 5'9", and at the time, I was probably about 145, 150.
Mm-hmm.
I went flying.
He's a big dude.
He was built like a brick shithouse. Yeah. Like, just And he grabbed me. He's like, "Oh, baby, I'm sorry." I said, "You just won the World Series. You could throw me all over this dance floor if you want
to. You're AL Player of the Month for August. You're a great acquisition."
I was like, "You can do whatever you want."
Yeah.
And at one point, David Justice was sitting on the railing, drinking, and just looking around. And there was this girl in front of me. Now, I was catty when I was in my 20s. Okay. So this girl in front of me, she's blonde, really great body, but she's basically wearing a napkin for a top. Mm-hmm. It was like this black, just it wrapped around, it covered her boobs. It had a clear strap in the back, so it looked like she didn't have anything on from the back. Mm-hmm. And she was sitting there or standing there and like gesticulating very dramatically, let's say. And her head is bopping, and I'm standing behind her making fun of her, not realizing that David Justice is watching me do this. I turn, and he starts laughing.
That's awesome.
And he holds up his beer to me, and I'm like,
cheers.
Yeah. Thank you. Sorry.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Stayed out till 4:30, got home at 5:30, went straight into the shower because I commuted into the city with my dad because it was a Thursday night into a Friday.
Thursday night, Friday morning. Yeah.
So I go straight into the shower. Then my dad goes in the shower. We jump in the car, commute down to Manhattan. I go to work. I'm drooling at my desk at lunch. Yeah. Home at 6:45 at night. My mom walks into my room at 7 o'clock. I'm not even fully on my bed. My legs were hanging off my bed. I was passed out face first. She had to undress me, which I don't remember. And I woke up at 9:30 Saturday morning after sleeping all those hours straight through.
That's worth the 15-hour crash for that.
It was so worth it.
Yeah. And then they don't win again until 2009, right? So you got the last, like, you know, celebration of that group for sure.
Right.
And, you know, like you said, 2009, you know, we're all a little bit older. We probably can't stay out till 4:30 again, right? So.
Yeah, no, definitely not.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, the I remember you were talking about that. We were sent the interview. Like, you know, I got the other side of that thing because I was mostly doing Mets stuff back then, and it just, you know, that was the first World Series I'd covered, and the first World Series losing locker room I'd covered. And I just remember being like struck at how just fast it ended. Like the game ended, we went downstairs, room was open. This is back when you could go in locker rooms, you know, not like these days, and like it's just like, you know, Rod Ventura is there talking. Jay Payton's there talking. Like,
and were they shocked at how the series played out? Like, I'm sure they probably were thinking, we're going to do this. We're going to be the ones to unseat the Yankees and win the series. And yeah, were they shocked about
it? Shocked wasn't, I wouldn't say shocked because they're the Yankees. Like, as bad as they were in September, they're still the Yankees.
Right.
It's not like they lost to not like they lost to the equivalent of the 2020 Brewers who got in with 29 wins, right?
Right.
I mean, they knew, you know, they were, and they're down 3-1, you know,
right.
they were certainly disappointed. And I remember Robin Ventura saying, someone saying, do you think it's a dynasty? And he said, look, if you're going to say the Bulls are a dynasty, they won 3 in a row twice. And you got to say these guys are a dynasty. And then he adds, but right now, I really don't care.
Right.
Because, you know,
why would
that
he?
Was their chance. Yeah.
Right.
Todd Pratt, you know, said, and he put his thumb and his pointer finger as close as you can get. Mm-hmm. He's like, we were that close every game. And they were.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to go down the books as a 5-game. I'm paraphrasing, but it's going to go down the books as a 5-game win / loss. And those are generally, you know, lopsided, but this wasn't a 5-game series. It was a great, great series worthy of 7 games. And he said the point, the finger, we were that close every game.
Right.
And they were.
All games were close. Yeah.
Yeah. And they were. And, but you know, you know, we go back to what we were saying a few minutes ago, the Yankees just had that championship muscle memory and whatever it was. And now you go back and you say, okay, what if Benitez closes out the ninth inning and they're down 0-1 for the first time since 96 and their winning streak is stopped. And, you know, and then Clemens is going in to pitch game 2 down 0-1 when we all know he pitches better as the bully.
Right.
I mean, who knows? I mean, if the Mets win game 1, you know, I don't know if they win the series, but things are certainly different.
Right.
You know, like you said, if they win game 2, who knows what things are. And there's 1,000. And that's what's so great about it. It's 20 years later and we can still sit here and not only identify each game, the turning point we were talking about before, you know, Timo Perez game 1, we can break it down and say, okay, it could turn out differently if X, Y, and Z happened. If that happened, maybe the Mets win because it was that good a series. It wasn't a White Sox Astros thing, or it was a, you know, a route and or Cardinals Red Sox. It was a route and, you know, no second guess, didn't know. Wondering what if? No, you could come up with a 1,000 scenarios in which the Mets win that series in 6 or 7 games.
Right.
You know, and that's what makes it fun.
Well, you know what's funny about game one? O'Neill's walk.
Yep.
I looked at my friends and I said, I don't know. I think they're winning the series. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, this is a really big, even at the time, it felt like a really big at bat.
I agree. You felt like, okay, they had a real shot to close this out. It's like, you know, you let the guy get up from the grave, you know, and I don't know if they're going to turn this back.
1-2 after three pitches, and he worked that to a 10-pitch walk. It was unbelievable.
Just wasting pitch after pitch. You know, he knew he couldn't catch up to the fastball. Just, you know, try to get in front of it a little bit and just hope he throws, you know, 3 more pitches outside the strike zone. And he did. And like, you know, it just, I remember watching the, was it Braves Dodgers? Had to be Braves Dodgers. And Markakis, they were saying Markakis is slowing up a little bit. You know, his bat's not quite catching up to fastballs, and he's fouling off 98 mile an hour heaters. I'd like to be that good,
right?
I'd like to, you know, be at the downside of my skills and just waste 98 mile an hour fastballs. That'd be pretty cool. That's what O'Neill did. He was 37, right? 2000, he was 37,
right?
And he hadn't had a great, like anyone else in that team, hadn't had a great last couple months. But you know, I mean, it's cliched and it got a little silly with the Warrior, but he refused to give in, and you know. It was back to 97. They hated to lose. They hated losing. They hated how it felt. And they wanted to do anything they could to avoid feeling that way again. And that time it worked out. He got the walk. And as you said in the book, everything kind of happened fast after that.
Right.
They tied a game. And then they won a few innings later. So, and yeah, again, they hang on there in game one. Who knows what happens?
Right. And again, with them, it's all the experience that they had. And like you said, they didn't like losing. And they did everything they could to avoid losing.
It's interesting because
streak of games.
Yep. Steve Phillips was saying he thought, you know, 2001, obviously the Yankees went all the way back and almost won the World Series again. The Mets had a lousy year until late summer when they got real hot before and after the terror attacks. Mm-hmm. And Steve said, you know, I thought, looking back now, you know, 19 years later when we talked, he's like, I think, you know, we got a little complacent. We made the World Series. You know, paraphrasing a bit, you know, we thought we did what we needed to do. And the Yankees, you know, they'd win, and the next day Steinbrenner would be ranting about something and how are we gonna do it again? How are we gonna do it again?
Right.
You know, and now look, you want to stretch it out. You know, the Yankees now are a really well run organization, but Hal's a little lower key than his dad.
Yeah.
And like, okay, so like, you know, we didn't win, you know, Hal talking, we didn't win, but you know, the process was good. And you know, we ran into the certainly the league champion, if not the world champion. They ran into the Rays this year, the Astros last year won the pennant, the Red Sox won the series and 18 and the Astros in 17. So they've run into the pennant winner or the world champion 4 straight years.
Right.
Would George have taken that?
Oh my God. Yeah. And
probably not.
I mentioned this on a show either last week or the week before that I think if Hank were the one who had taken over the team, he would have been more like his father.
Right.
And I say in some ways it's good that Hal is the way he is because, you know, George was a lot.
Yeah.
Like he really was a lot. But there are some aspects of George that I wish Hal also had, because as you said, he'll say things like, you know, okay, we didn't win, but at least this happened or this. And it's like, no, it's not. No. Like
that's where the Dodgers are now, too, if you think about it. You know, they got to win one of these years. Everything's going right. They're a great team. They're well run. At some point, though, in these markets, you know, you need to win.
Right.
And now you got to worry, like, not worry is the right word, but
they're going to be like the Bills.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, is the Yankees, I was reading something today, is the Yankees window closing with this core? I mean, they're not, you know, Stanton's 30, Judge is already 28, which is hard to believe. Mm-hmm. Cole's 31, are going to be 31. He should be great, but pitchers get hurt. You know, Chapman's 32 and, you know, he's probably starting to slow down a little bit. They're going to be really good for a long time. I mean, you know, one of these years, it's going to go their way. But, you know, will it be with a handful of different players? You know, was this team's best chance in 17 or 18? Who knows? You know?
Well, I always talk about 17 as being a really nice surprise.
Yeah. And
yes, it was a bummer they lost in the ALCS, but the fact that they even made it to game 7 of the ALCS after the way the division series went against Cleveland after game 2 was a miracle. Yep. And it was such a surprise. And that was a fun team to watch. And then, you know, we find out about the Astros and, you know, their nonsense. And it makes it a little harder to swallow after the fact. Like, at the time, I was like, all right, you know, they got beaten by the better team, and they went on to win, and it's fine. And
right. Your window's wide open.
Yeah. Now I'm like,
yeah.
And even this year, they should have beaten the Rays in the first round. If Aaron Boone didn't try to out-raise the Rays in game two.
Yep, I agree.
I mean, you know, people are treating this as the Rays knocking out the big bad Yankees, but they barely beat the Yankees in five games.
Took the ninth inning or eighth inning? Home run by the undrafted free agent off of Chapman to win it, right?
But you could see that coming from a mile away, because when he put Chapman in the seventh inning, I looked at my brother and I'm like, all right, it's either going to be a walk-off, it's going to be a home run in the eighth, and they're going to come up in the ninth and not do anything.
Right.
Yep. And that's exactly how it played out. I saw it in my mind, and I thought to myself, here we go.
And that's what happened.
And that's exactly what I've watched baseball for so long now that I see things. Like, I saw Kiermaier's home run last night happen before it happened. I was like, Baez is going to throw him a meatball. He's going to hit the shit out of it. And that's exactly what happened. What I did not see was the last play of the game.
Right. That was amazing.
That Arozarena was going to play a part in winning that game, but the way that it happened was nothing anyone expected. It was perfect for 2020.
That was fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything more 2020 than that final play last night.
Head over heels, falling sideways.
I mean,
and then he crawls across home plate, right?
You know, and the umpire has no idea what's happening. The guys on TV didn't know what was happening. Yep. Cameraman had no idea what was happening. Yep.
It was a great call by Joe Buck. Joe Buck gets a lot of criticism, because I've criticized him too. But he just described that as it happened. And that's all he can do sometimes.
I like him so much better now. I really do.
He's been good. I have to admit. Yeah, he used to, I guess, you know, he's Joe Buck and he's everywhere. The guy, I saw something, he's working like every night for like 3 weeks this month between football and baseball. Someone else can do those games, you know. So, you know, it's a little bit of oversaturation, but, you know, last night was just chaos. And he really had a great last call. Just, this is what happened, this is what happened, this is what happened. You know, his voice doesn't go up eight octaves like mine would have, you know. and then, you know, they win the game and they get they let the scene, you know, describe itself for a few seconds after that. So, yeah, Buck is really good.
That's okay, because this is the problem I was having in the division series with Brian Anderson and Ron Darling. Mm-hmm. I felt like they were talking too much and not allowing things to play out. And it was driving me crazy because Ron Darling is so good in the SNY booth. And I feel like he loses a lot of that in the national booth. And I feel like this is a thing with everyone when they step into a national booth. It's something with the networks telling them to do things.
Right.
Because I feel like people on ESPN are the same way. Yep. Not all of them. There are guys who have been on ESPN for a long time who are great. I love Boog Shiambi. He's great. Yep. But, you know, Vaskirjan, you know, even A-Rod, he's great at post-game commentary and talking about what happened in the game. But during the game, they make him say such dumb things. And you're just like, no, you're the baseball.
The storyline or something. Yeah, they kind of create storylines. Yeah, I agree with that. Mm-hmm. I actually thought Darling was pretty good. I like Darling a lot more this year than I have in previous years in the booth. I thought it was Darling, Anderson, and Francoeur, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They thought they were really, really good. And I usually feel that way. Like, Darling's phenomenal on SNY, and that's just the best booth in the world, I think. And then he goes to the playoffs. It's kind of like, I don't know if it's just because it's unfamiliar teams or what, but yeah, it just feels like it's always a little something.
I mean, I can see that too, because if you're not seeing these teams day in and day out, you know, it's difficult to really talk about the guys and really know about what's happening. Right. If you don't see them day in and day out. Like for me, I'm so done with Michael Kay. I can't take it anymore. I've been done with him for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, his calls are so manufactured. I feel like he has a list of them. Just pick one for the moment
and go with it.
You know, Jeter's 3,000th, I can't stand. Jeter's walk-off in his last game, I can't stand. Mm-hmm. You know, where fantasy becomes reality. Like, every time I hear it, I cringe. My favorite Michael Kay call, I have to say, is in 2000 against the Mariners when he was still on the radio. And he said, you know, get your tokens ready.
You might be riding the subway.
Yeah.
Yep. After Justice's home run.
Yes.
Oh, that was
with Arthur Rhodes?
Arthur Rhodes, yep. Oh. Lefty, yep. Yep.
Yeah, that was when you were like, oh yeah, okay, they got
happening.
It. Yeah,
yep, it's happening.
Yep.
And it happened and it ends with fun bit of trivia. Rivera actually got Edgar Martinez out in the series.
Ah, which
he
is
rolled over to second.
Which is that's right. I actually remember that because I remember I was basically clenching my butt with Edgar Martinez up because
It might be the only time you ever got him out. It's exaggeration, but, you didn't get him out very often.
No, but it seems like it because he really had his number.
In just a moment, the discussion with Jerry Beach continues, but first, let's talk about rockauto.com. Because if you have a car or a truck and you don't want to spend a lot of money for parts, you should go to rockauto.com. rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
Talking about the Mariners and how good they were, but how they never really did anything, you know, never made it past a certain point. I was at Dwight Gooden's no-hitter. I don't know how the hell he did that against that lineup in 1996.
I know. I have a Dwight Gooden no-hitter story. You want to hear my Dwight Gooden no-hitter story?
Sure.
So it's May, was it May 14th, right? It's mid-May of 96. And it's the last week of classes at Hofstra. And I'm a senior, fifth year senior, I should add. So I've got a physics exam. I got to pass.
I was one of those.
I'm not a physics guy. I'm not a science guy. I'm barely a math guy. So it's Tuesday and my exam is Thursday. And I'm saying, all right, I got to study the next couple of nights for this blasted exam that I hate. And my old roommate walks into the school newspaper office. And I'm sitting with my girlfriend, who later became my wife. And he's like, hey, you know, dudes, whatever. He's like, I got two tickets to the Yankee game tonight. Me and Christina are going to go. You want to go with us? I'm like, I got to study. My wife says, no, let's go to the game. Let's go to the game. I'm like, I'm sorry, honey. I really got to study for this. It's physics. It's a bear, blah, blah, blah. She goes, okay. If Dwight Gooden throws a no-hitter, I'm never forgiving you.
Oh, no.
I swear to God that happened. So we go back to – so my John and his girlfriend – his now it's his wife. They go to the game. They had four tickets. He had two to give up. Mm-hmm. So they go to the game. Michelle and I go back to my room, and we're actually studying. No. We're studying. This is serious stuff here. And so we take a break, and we put on the TV at Hofstra. And the Hofstra TV, I swear on my late mother's good name, never had MSG. We flip on my TV. MSG is on. And Dwight Gooden's walking off the mound in the sixth inning, and they won't show the score. Michelle's like, he's throwing a no-hitter. I'm like, oh, for God's sakes. That was the worst hour of my life. Not quite. Next three innings, I'm like, somebody just get a bleeping hit. Somebody just get a hit. Just get a hit. Just get a hit. Like you said, he's up at 130 pitches. He's walking the ballpark. Mm-hmm. They've got 18 Hall of Famers in that lineup. And it's like, okay, he's going to get up a hit. And he never gets up a hit. So there's two outs in the ninth, and Michelle says, you know, I forgive you. I said, I don't forget myself. And he pops up. Jeter caught the last pop-up, right? Was it Sorrento?
Yes.
So he catches it. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to fail that exam. And an hour later, my roommate calls me, dude, that was the best thing ever. I don't want to hear it. I failed the exam.
Oh, no.
I had to take a summer class. I was just, you know what it is when you're just screwed up, you're ruined. You know who's ruined?
Oh, yeah.
I had to take a summer class in Connecticut where I grew up to graduate, and I did. And my mother, who's a teacher, and this is like years later. We're at a picnic or something, the family at my parents' house. And I'm telling the story of how I got screwed out of a no-hitter because I tried to study for an exam that I failed anyway. And my mother says, you did the right thing. You should have stayed home to study that exam. I'm like, no, I didn't, Ma. Yes, you did. Okay, I'm going to stop talking about it now, Mom. And well, that's my no-hitter story.
For me.
So years later,
before
our daughter was born, in 2012, I think it's about 2010, we go to the Hall of Fame every year. And Dwight's signing autographs at CVS across from the Hall of Fame. The wife says, come here. We're going to tell him our story. Okay. All right, let's go. So we go. And like it was cool, but kind of poignant because Dwight should be across the street. You know, he should be in that hall.
Right.
And he's signing autographs. And like there was like no line. People just shoot the bull with him. And which was sweet and kind of sad, too, because, you know, he should have done more than it should have worked out better than it did. So we go and tell him the story, and he got those hands are so long. You can tell the guy threw a baseball for a living. Mm-hmm. You know, the hands are so long, the fingers are so long. And we tell him the story. He gets a big kick out of it, and he says to Michelle, don't let him ever forget it. And she hasn't. And so then I end up seeing two no-hitters in 2015. Chris Heston don't hits the Mets on a Tuesday night. And Max Scherzer throws that near-perfect game next on the penultimate night of the season.
Oh, right.
And my wife is not happy with me. She's like, I'm glad you got to see no-hitter. But I'm like, I know. She's like, you get to see 80 games, whatever, 60 games a year. I'm like, I know. Trust me, I know. So that's my Dwight Gooden no-hitter story. So I'm sorry, I derailed that. So you were a Dwight Gooden no-hitter, and I made it about me.
but for me, I had finished classes, and I was mentally and physically exhausted from my trip from Oswego. I just was a lazy lump that entire day. My dad calls me up in the middle of the day and says, you know, do you want to go to the Yankee game tonight? And I'm like, can I think about it? And he said, yeah. He said, I'll come home, and if you don't want to go, I'll just go with your brother. It's no big deal. I'm like, okay. So at the very last second, I'm like, you know what? I'm finally home. Let me go to a game.
Oh, man. And good for you.
Mom has a headache. She doesn't want to go. So we have one extra ticket. We give our ticket. For some reason, Freddie says didn't have a ticket.
Really?
Oh, wow. Yes. We gave him our ticket.
That's awesome.
And I banged on his pot. And, you know, he's like so excited. I was like, oh, my God, it's Freddie says. And, you know, he's walking around the stadium. He didn't sit with us. We were in the last row of the main section 14. Mm-hmm. And when Sorrento's pop-up went in the air, we couldn't see it because the upper deck and loge were over us.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt like that ball was in the air for 20 minutes. And even like, you know, around the sixth inning, my dad looks at me and he goes, look at the scoreboard. You notice something? And I looked and I'm like, oh my God. So every time anyone around us mentioned no hitter, we were all crossing ourselves and being like, don't jinx it.
Right.
And after the pop-ups caught and, you know, they're hanging Gooden off the field. And God, it was like watching a movie. It didn't feel like I was there. It was
about the experience.
Yes. It was very odd. And I just was like, am I really here? Is this happening? And my dad turns to me and he goes, are you glad you came? I'm like, yes. Yes, I am.
Trust me. Be glad you went.
3 years later, I injured my leg and couldn't go to the Yankee game on July 18th, 1999, but my brother did. So I'm at home with my leg up in the air.
Oh, man.
And I'm watching David Cohn pitch a perfecto, and I'm thinking to myself, I'm going to die.
Yes.
The worst.
Oh, man. And that's terrible.
Yeah, and I've told him this story, and I was just like,
it's
21 years later, and it's still
hurts. Hey, it's 24 years of Doc Gooden, and trust me, it still stings for us. I'm gonna tell my wife after this, she's gonna probably not cook dinner tonight for me, like maybe make me eat bread or something.
Your book is it available everywhere? Where is it available? Where people get
it's honestly, I haven't been to a bookstore since all this started, but I assume, Sports Ball Machine goes to all the big bookstores. So I assume it's at Barnes & Noble if you want to shop for it there. Otherwise, Amazon.com for sure.
And I have to say what I've read of it. I mean, I love, because this is up my alley because, you know, I used to write random box score pieces for Hardball Times. And I just love looking back at games from the past and recounting them. And, you know, I kind of wish I can be the type of writer that could tell all the stories about things and, you know, the stories behind the players and all that stuff, but I'm not that disciplined.
I'm not either. I don't know how I pulled this one off.
I also like the fact that I can read your book and not have to consult a thesaurus. It's easy to read and it's pleasant because I'm kind of dumb when it comes to big fancy words, and they take me out of things. So it's good. I think anyone who's a Yankee fan and a Mets fan, even though I mean it's not that much fun to recall as a Mets fan, but it's still really interesting to look back at this. And again, 20 years, wow,
crazy. Yeah, my goal is I'm glad you liked the interspersive stories, because you know obviously when I outlined it, I was like, all right, game one, game two, game three, game four, game five. With some history, you know, preceding that. But like, I don't want to give someone, you know, two chapters of dry the first 60 years of the century in New York baseball. You know, I kind of wanted to find a way to kind of intersperse it all together, and not just also when it comes to the games, just do recaps. Because if you're reading the book, you know what happened, right?
Right.
I want to try to do something. So you read it, even though you know what happened. You read about Timo Perez not running hard, even though you know what happened. So, you know, it was fun to, and I always say, you know, I was fortunate because I covered those Mets teams. So I knew them, you know, those guys a little bit, and the Yankees won. So they didn't mind talking to a complete stranger about the series.
Right.
If it was vice versa, you know, it might have been a little more difficult. But, you know, the Yankees, they won. So, of course, they're glad to talk about what it's like to win in 2000. And I knew the Mets, you know, pretty well from those days. So, yeah, so it was a lot of fun. You know, it's hard to believe it's been 20 years. And it's fun to look back at it now and see how, you know, like especially the Joe Torre, Casey Stengel shared paths, you know, how they're both kind of like, you know, all right, last chance for these guys. Haven't really worked out. And then they go to the Hall of Fame because they oversaw dynasties with the Yankees. So it was a lot of fun to put together. How long did it take? It's funny because, you know, as writers, you know, you get used to pitching ideas and gets rejected. And you're okay, that's cool, whatever. Well, this one, the publisher had the book slotted into spring 2020, and the writer couldn't do it. So they got in touch with me. They found out that I have, I'd covered the Mets and the Yankees, and they said in June of 19, can you write this by November? I'm like, well, okay. There's about three things I could do in 3 months, and that's one of them.
Right.
You know, the other book is I could write a book about Hofstra sports and maybe something about the Simpsons. So I said, yeah, you know, and I'm a hoarder, so I've got all my files from back then in the basement. And I said, yeah, you know, I can do that. And, you know, I was fortunate because, you know, the Yankee guys obviously are all, you know, O'Neill, Cone, those guys, you can get them at the ballpark.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like I had to travel a lot. And the longest trip I took was to Citizens Bank Park to talk to Joe McEwing when the White Sox were in town for the book. So it was, you know, I wrote it in like, you know, I remember my first interviews were Old Timers Day, which was mid-June of 19. And I submitted the manuscript in, just mid-November of last year. Mm-hmm. And so, but, you know, it was just, you know, this stuff I knew. You know, if you told me you got 4 months to write about the Celtics Lakers 85, I'm not gonna pull that off.
Right.
So you know, it was just something that, you know, was, you know, top of my, you know, I already had my brain and already had a lot, you know, pretty good base knowledge of, and it was just fun. You know, it was a lot of fun to write about it, and you know, even the Mets, you know, even though they lost, you know, it was a cool thing to be a part of. You know, Bobby V had a great line. I think it's the last line of the book. He said, you know, you've never seen LA World Series. You've never seen Chicago. New York happened. It was really friggin' cool.
Right.
And he actually said friggin'. And he said, you know, would our lives have been better if we'd won? Yeah. But it was still pretty great. And it was. You know, like now we're talking about 20 years later. It hasn't happened since then. There's been one in 64 years. And we saw it. You know, whether it's your fans, right? We saw it.
Right.
And like, so it gets cooler with each passing year. And now going back to what made those Yankees so good and going back every year, we understand now how hard it is to get through the 3 or 4 round playoff system,
mm-hmm.
and how much has to go right for one team in New York to get there, never mind two. And it happened. And it didn't just happen. They played 5 memorable games that you can remember. And you know, like they say in books, sometimes you want to write the hook of your book on a napkin. We can write about every game on a napkin.
Mm-hmm.
Timo, Piazza Clemens, you know, Benny Agbayani, Luis Soho, Derek Jeter home run. I mean, you know, we got 5 great games. And it hasn't happened since then. And, you know, it looks like the expanded playoffs are going to stay in some format. It's going to be, it's hard to imagine things going that well, that going that, you know, spilling out that way again anytime soon. And we got to see it. It's pretty cool.
I think it is funny that he actually said frigging.
He did. He said frigging. I was walking with him. He said frigging. I'm like, all right. I could write F, you know, the F word, but he said frigging. and it was freaking cool, you know, fan, writer, player, participant, broadcaster. It was great to, you know, say you were there and we were watching it, and it has happened since, and the only time in 64 years, you know, it's pretty cool to have witnessed it.
The other thing I forgot to mention, this I have to say, to this day, Mark Anthony's national anthem that he sang at Shea is still one of my favorite renditions of all time.
I was that 3 or 5?
I think it may have been.
I can't remember. I should know this.
Was it 5?
I can't remember. Shoot. I just remember. All I remember about Shea was the Baja Men in terms of pregame stuff. I don't remember.
The Baja Men was before Jeter.
Yeah. 4. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's
I don't remember Mark Anthony. I don't remember that.
That's another thing, kids. if you weren't old enough to appreciate the 2000 World Series, the Baja men were a thing.
That's right. That's right. The one thing I wish I could have done, I just couldn't find the right people, was talk to the Baja men.
Mm.
What do you guys remember about that? That would have been fun. But I didn't have any luck getting in touch with them. Yeah, the Baja men were a thing for about 3 weeks.
Yeah, that song, that's what you think of.
Yep. And the Mets' other song, remember the song We Like to Party by the Venga Boys?
Oh, yeah. The Yankees used to play that, too.
Did they, too? I didn't know. Okay. The Mets definitely played that a lot. And they played that after Agbayani walked off the Giants in game 3 of the LDS.
Is coming.
Yes, I can't sing at all, so I'm not going to try. But yes. Yeah, thank you. I was trying to get the beat in my head. But yeah, that's it. Yes.
God. Yeah, the late 90s, 2000s were wonder. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Benny's on the bases to that, and they're pounding that out of the Shays old speakers, and place is shaking. That's pretty cool.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you. I appreciate having me on.
I knew that it would be a fun conversation because, as you said, we both experienced it in different ways. You experienced it as a writer and a fan.
Like I said, at that point, I'm 27, and, you know, I'm still got a little bit of that Met fandom in me. It's gone now. But, it's a little part of you. You know, my best buddy from back home was a big Mets fan, and we were the only Mets fans in Torrington, Connecticut, Red Sox country in October 86.
Right.
That was a pretty bad night for a little while. But, it was cool to, you know, when you're a kid, you know, you say, I want to cover the Mets. And you did. It was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was fun. And but, you know, even just, you know, looking back on it, you know, a little more detached, it was just so, like we were saying, just so great to observe it, be a part of it a little bit, and just know you saw it. You witnessed history. We witnessed history. And, you know, each year that goes by, I think people realize how rare and unique it was. And I'd love to see it happen again, because that'd be awesome. But, each year it doesn't. I think 2000 gets a little more special for people who saw it as they look back on it.
Mm-hmm. And as I keep saying, I almost feel as if I feel like the Subway Series, not the World Series Subway Series, but the Subway Series as its
a regular season
entity in the regular season is getting tired.
Yeah.
I feel as special as it was, you know, back then it was such a big deal for the, like I said earlier, you know, they're not playing for a mayor's trophy. This is like regular season. These games count.
Games count. Yep.
You know, now that magic is lost. I feel like maybe the schedule, like they should make it where the Yankees and the Mets don't play.
I'd be fine with that.
In the next few years and build it up again.
Yep.
But they won't do that.
No. I will say this though, you know, crazy stuff tends to happen when they do play each other. Like you think, I agree with you. You know, if interleague play is worn out, I'd much rather see it go back to, and it's not. Genie's out of the bottle, fine. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'd love to see just you play in the NL. Maybe if you just play the Yankees play the Mets, Cubs play the White Sox, et cetera, fine. I don't need to see the Yankees playing the Mariners, or the Mets playing the Mariners.
Right.
But this year, crazy stuff happened. You know, the Mets played the Yankees, and the Mets hosted the Yankees on the day Tom Seaver died, and they won in a walk-off.
Right.
Off Chapman. And then was it the next week or the week before that? The Mets walked off the Yankees at Yankee Stadium.
Right. Right.
Crazy stuff happens when they play. So, like, yeah, it feels worn out, but then you put those two teams on the field and stuff happens. And, like, you know, Alonso walking off the Yankees on the day after Tom Seaver died is just as wild as storybook as it gets.
Right.
The concept is tired, but they do play good games. They do play memorable games. They do play fun games when they do play. So it does work out.
Now, I wonder if next year will be allowed to even go to games.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because at this rate, it feels like this pandemic is never going to end because people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. And it feels as if next season is going to be really interesting because they're going to start everything on time because they know how to play the games in a bubble. They know how to make sure that people are safe. And if they're not, they know what to do when they're not. So it'll be interesting to see a 162 game season being played in these circumstances. And again, at this rate, it looks like that might be happening.
Well, let's hope that, you know, maybe by halfway through it's corralled a little bit and, you know, I mean, I saw something interesting. I think Craig Calcaterra was writing that You know, this World Series feels like the test run for next year. How, you know, oh, we'll work with 10,000 people in Arlington, so it can work for 10,000 people in city XYZ, even though it probably shouldn't.
Right.
So I would be surprised if they played next year without fans, just because I think he's right. And I think that this is a trial run. See, it worked. Nobody, there wasn't a mass, you know, spreading event. Maybe there was, maybe there is. Maybe we'll find out in 2 weeks that, it was a super spreader.
Right.
We don't. But if the Arlington gets through it, you know, no one's unscathed these days, but if they can get through without anything really bad happening, I could see as a defense for, oh, it works and here's how.
You know, right, so but it's also...
But it's still up to municipalities, right? So, like, I don't see Cuomo jumping the gun to get 10,000 people in the stadium. So, you know, who knows? I think if it happens, I think we'll be the last, we being New York, probably be one among the last to get in because they've been very cautious for the last 7 months.
Right.
You know?
But I also feel as if Manfred is seeing this as, hey, you know, we're playing these games at neutral sites and this is what's happening. And I'm afraid that... they're going to, you know, because I think it was last week, Tyler Kepner wrote something about Scott Boras saying that.
Oh, yeah.
Wants the World Series to be at a neutral site.
It's not the Super Bowl, Rob.
Exactly. And it's not only one game. It's a series.
Right.
So,
no. It's a week and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. No, thank you.
I don't know. He's got a lot of bad ideas and he's implemented a lot of them. So we'll see what happens. But hopefully, you know, next October. In November, if necessary, you know, it's people, you know, people can be at games and they could be at the actual home cities of the champions and hopefully get back to at least having that, you know, at least having that going in effect.
So I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Jerry Beach. I know I did. We had a lot of things to talk about. Jerry and I are very close in age, so we have a lot of similar experiences. And I thought it was really interesting to hear about the Subway Series in 2000 from the perspective of someone who was there as a writer and talking to him about it and also sharing my experience as a fan. So I hope you all enjoyed it. And if you want me to have more guests on the show, please let me know because I do have a list of people that I would love to ask to come on, but I'm a little afraid to do that. So if you all want me to keep doing this, let me know and I will do it. And if you have a specific person who you would like to hear from, and it could be someone associated with the Yankees, whether it's a broadcaster or a beat writer, or it could be someone who's on the national baseball stage, please let me know, and I will try to reach out to them and get them on the show. On tomorrow's show, I could be talking about either the Dodgers winning their first World Series since 1988, or I could be talking about the Tampa Bay Rays tying the series and bringing it to a deciding game 7. So that should be exciting either way. But for now, that's it for this episode of Locked On Yankees, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'd like to remind you that you can subscribe to this show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast, Locked On Yankees. One more thing, if you could be so kind, please rate the podcast and spread the word about this podcast to your fellow Yankee fans. We would really appreciate it. Enjoy your Tuesday, and I will talk to you all tomorrow.